Welcome to the IASA podcast. I am Jason Neville, Director of Social Media and Publications for IASA. Today's podcast is a follow-up to an email from the IASA COVID-19 SWAT team that we sent out Tuesday morning in regards to emergency planning. Joining me today is IASA Director, Executive Director, Dr. Brent Clark, Dr. Jennifer Garrison, Superintendent in Vandalia, CUSD 203, Gary Tipsword, Superintendent at Leroy, CUSD number 2, and Dr. Brian Harris, Superintendent at Barrington, CUSD 220. To start, can everyone just kind of introduce themselves and just sort of give a quick overview of your district and community, and then anything about sort of where your district, how it's been affected by COVID-19?
Good morning. This is Jennifer Garrison, Superintendent of Vandalia Community Unit School District number 203. We are located about 90 miles south of Springfield. We are a pre-K through 12 unit district with about 1,500 kids. 60% of our students qualify for free and reduced lunch. And we talk about e-learning or remote learning. Some of our students have the connectivity while others do not.
This is Gary Tipsword, Superintendent of Leroy Schools. Leroy is a unit district located in McLean County, almost in the center of the state. COVID-19 for us, to some degree, we had the benefit of spring break. So we've been on spring break for the last week. I think the challenges that we're going to face is taking a look at the what's next. So we were able to overcome 4 days and then take a spring break. And so now for us, the challenge is going to be thinking about going forward, both what is on the calendar today and really the what if of an extended absence. So what is that potentially going to look like?
This is Brian Harris, Superintendent of Schools in Barrington, Northwest Suburban Chicago, pre-K-12 district. We have 12 schools, 9,000 students, about 1,400 teachers and staff in the district, so a large suburban district in Northwest Suburban Chicago. We have obviously had the challenges everybody else has had as well. We actually started on the remote learning plan that we had put together last fall, which has actually been approved by ISB, the e-learning. We were fortunate enough to have that put together what we anticipated being for snow days and inclement weather days, but obviously this unforeseen situation with the pandemic thrust it into full action for us. We had 4 days last week that we used in that fashion, and we've been on spring break this week as well, but certainly trying to manipulate and change our plan to be able to provide education for students long term.
So, but my question is to you is for the IASA COVID-19 SWAT team yesterday we issued its seventh report in the morning. Can you just discuss sort of why it was important to send a report focused on emergency planning right now?
As we met for the first time as a SWAT team on March the 15th, we immediately began thinking about the various phases of planning that superintendents and school districts would start to encounter if this pandemic drug on and the closure, school closure drug on for a while. So, of course, the first phase was education and how do we have a continuity of education and how do we feed children? But the natural progression was eventually getting towards the emergency planning as the number of cases, confirmed cases of COVID-19 were realized inside of Illinois. So we felt like as a team, even as early as probably over this past weekend, Saturday and Sunday, that it was time to probably shift to that phase. But we wanted to make sure we were in step with the governor's office of the Illinois Emergency Management Agency. And so we waited until Tuesday to send that out. But I think we were pretty timely because that's the same day that IEMA had issued letters to all the county EMAs across the state to start thinking about and putting their plan into forward gear. So that's why we put it together. That's why it was put out.
Does anybody else have anything they want to add to that?
I would just say that right now, as superintendents of schools, I think everybody in the state has a unique responsibility to provide supports for the good of the community. The community health and welfare certainly is a high priority right now. Our primary responsibility, as always, has been to educate kids, but certainly that has pivoted in the last several days and trying to provide the resources and support we have available to us, to our other governmental bodies, to provide wellness in our entire community. So I'm happy to share what we're doing in our community in that regard.
And I think, Jason, one of the other aspects in our smaller communities throughout the state, for many of those small towns, the school district is the hub. Small towns may not have a hospital, they may not have some of those other resources, but to be able to capitalize on the local school district's ability to communicate, to be able to transport, just to capitalize on those resources that we have, to be the center or to be the hub of those small towns, for that purpose of dissemination of accurate information and responsiveness, to provide kind of assurances and some degree of calmness and trust in our communities. We see that as valuable, particularly in times that are so unknown at this point.
Dr. Clark, what's some of the sort of first steps? We sent out that email. What are some of the first steps superintendents need to be doing right now in terms of emergency planning?
Okay. I think the first step that superintendents should take in terms of emergency planning would be to identify the resources, the facilities, the personnel, and the devices that they may have within their school district that could be beneficial and useful as their community at large starts to respond to what we're seeing as a healthcare crisis. And then the second step would be to contact their emergency management agency within their county and ask to be a part of that team, as well as identify and notify them of the various resources that they have available to the team.
Dr. Garrison, the letter, you sort of talked about an emergency operations center and just understanding a school district's role in that process. Can you elaborate sort of more on what the EOC concept is and sort of what a school district's role could be in that process?
Sure. So the Emergency Operations Center is a tried and true method. You can find more information on the CDC website. We embedded that link in our 7th report. But really think of it as three pillars, being people, systems, and things. And we're talking about intergovernmental agency planning. So that includes public health, EMA, police, first responders. It's going to look different in every community. But who really think about the first responders and then building the backbone of supports for those first responders? So it's really a logistical conversation when we're planning, and getting the systems to interconnect and break down the silos, I would say, is where superintendents can really play an instrumental role, as we have tried to break down silos within our own districts, our own schools, and even ISB has been talking about breaking down those silos. So really from that systems perspective, taking a leadership role, we know communication will be essential. So how can we best communicate to our local communities with one voice? And I think Gary said this, really to provide that calming message to our community that we're in this together and we will get through this.
Hey, Gary, you're in McLean County. There's some of this work going on. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we're kind of, I guess, lucky in McLean County in that our largest employer is State Farm Insurance, that has a lot of specialization in catastrophe responses. So being able to lean on them, I think, is helpful for us. But Barry Riley at District 87, early in the process, brought together a variety of community leaders, our city managers, county manager, hospitals, and then education to include both school districts and higher ed, the universities that exist in Bloomington Normal as well, along with fire and police. And the main focus of that was to bring them together to understand where's everybody at in this moment, right? To some degree, your public schools had a jump start on this because of school closure. We had to figure out, okay, what are we going to do to deliver education? What are we going to do to deliver meals? So this process of thinking for our K-12 environment just had a jump start maybe over some other folks. And so what Dr. Riley did coming out of that was helped everybody understand where each other are at, potentially kind of what status, what are the concerns, what are opportunities that one another can provide? And then the most important thing was to build this sense of connection between those organizations so that there was this common vision of how we can rely on one another and lean into one another in the best interest of our community. sometimes it's as simple as just getting people around a common table, obviously 6 feet apart from one another, but to have that kind of common conversation. That has actually led to a concept called being prepared. So Bloomington Normal Prepared, where the Convention and Visitors Bureau, the Chamber of Commerce, and the Economic Development Council actually came together to create a broad connectedness, not only for education, but for small businesses in the community. So I think that model of just bringing people together for the purpose of connection, and then realizing that what we have in public education is the ability to communicate very, very quickly to a large segment of a population that maybe some of the other organizations just can't do as quickly as us. So being able to capitalize on all those resources and what Dr. Riley has done in leading that effort in McLean County has just been outstanding. And I think a good model, if people don't know kind of where to start, and I think that's something that's valuable that we can all learn from one another in the process, that there are no right or wrong answers, but just opportunities to learn and to innovate in this very unusual time.
Dr. Harris, what's been happening in your community with this?
Yeah, I want to capitalize and extend a little bit on what Gary shared in regard to, I believe, school districts across the state, whether you're downstate in a rural area, if you're in a large urban or in the suburban environment we're in, we have a unique ability and capacity to be able to communicate to a large number of people in our community. And that certainly has played out in mine. In our school district for the suburban environment, we are large geographically, about 72 square miles. We have 8 villages that are part of our school district. So I have a unique opportunity on a regular basis in communicating with all those different villages within our general area. And they actually have an organization called the Barrington Area Government Association, BACOG. And while the school district is not a sitting member of that group, we do go and visit their meetings periodically, provide updates and support and guidance for all the municipalities in our particular area. So that being said, that has currently been kind of the conduit I've been working through. Gary also mentioned, which certainly played out in my community as well, that because we closed school, we were the first governmental body to take immediate action in relationship to COVID-19. And I think ever since then, some of the other governmental bodies in our community have been relying on us to help lead the effort to provide this emergency support as needed. And again, I think another unique skill that superintendents have, and we kind of take it for granted, but it's not really that easy of a task, is when we call snow days or we call days off of school, we do that on a regular basis a few times a year. And no other governmental body in the entire, state will shut down their complete organization in 1 or 2 days and then reopen it the following day. I mean, that is a monumental operational task. And I don't believe any of the other groups are used to that type of process. So there is some unique leadership skills that I think superintendents have in it that can certainly be beneficial in this type of a pandemic situation. So I encourage superintendents to, use those skills as they're working with their community leaders in that regard. I have been on regular phone calls about every 48 hours with my village managers, with our police and fire, as well as our park district and our library executive director. So in the suburban environment, we have a lot of different governmental bodies, and it's important to stay in contact with them, which we're doing right now. One of the things in Barrington that we have is a formal intergovernmental agreement with the Lake County and Cook County governments for public health reasons. Barrington High School has been designated as an emergency healthcare site for any type of a community health need. So that was originally established back in 2008 during the H1N1 and swine flu crisis, and where we actually gave vaccines on a large scale to our community. So ever since then, we've kind of had this evergreen agreement, and my guess is it may be re-engaging here in the short term if that community need arises. So I think superintendents just need to understand and be ready to provide those supports as the community needs and desires them.
Dr. Garrison, is there anything you want to add about what's going on in Vandalia, or just that would be helpful for Southern Illinois superintendents?
Sure. Speaking from the small rural perspective in central Southern Illinois, my recommendations and what we're doing in Vandalia is really the first step is bringing and identifying who the partners are. Your EMA coordinator might be embedded within your local health department, and really thinking from that county perspective, because we are thinking in a rural area from the county perspective, utilizing your regional superintendent to help bring people together as well as a recommendation that I would have. And then once you identify the key partners, it's just setting up a call every other day, depending on what COVID-19 currently looks like in your community. For example, in Fayette County, right now we have 0 confirmed cases, but we know that the testing requirements are still fairly strict, that our county most likely will not have a positive case until those CDC, IDPH guidance are relaxed a little bit. So just the most important thing I can stress to my colleagues in Central Southern Illinois is that what I'm telling my school board is we are creating a plan, a robust plan. It is one time in my life that I hope this plan stays on the shelf, but we must be prepared in case we need to pull that plan off the shelf. Reach out to any of us on the SWAT team if you need support, or specifically me if you're in Central Southern Illinois, and we're here to help you.
Has anybody started having the conversation about the possibility of schools being used for hospitals in their communities?
You know, Jason, I think one of the things that really early on we tried to do was, and I think this goes back to Jennifer's point, the idea of creating a fairly comprehensive plan or picture that you hope you never have to use. And so one of the elements that we challenged our people to think about was, the what if. And so what if the system is overwhelmed? How could you leverage school buildings as hospitals? That's just something that we've not thought about a lot. I think Brian's point about, back in 2009, when people were thinking about how to respond to H1N1, there were different ways that we looked at solving problems back then. The idea of providing vaccinations or being a site testing location is one thing, but the idea of a hospital system being completely overwhelmed and how could you leverage your school systems, that was something we just hadn't considered. So when you think again about a small town in Illinois that doesn't have a hospital immediately accessible to them, what if the hospital nearest them is completely overwhelmed? What would you do in that small town? And it would seem like our facilities are logically suited for that if the need were to arise. So I think to have that conversation in hopes that you never have to execute on it, that was something that we found to be valuable and purposeful in our planning process. So I think it's worth considering. It's work that we've done in Leroy. It's conversations we've had in McLean County. But again, I think to Jennifer's point, you develop a robust plan in hopes of never having to use it. But it'd be better to do it now than in that moment when we have to be able to respond.
And I'll just add to that, when we think of a rapid response team, planning is almost impossible to do during a rapid response situation, which would require 24/7 supports. So just emphasizing having that plan. The question on the temporary hospitals, it's unique to each local community, but I will say Vandalia specifically, our Fayette County Hospital is literally a block and a half from my high school. So is that conversation much more relevant in my community? Yes, it is. Will we be having those conversations? Yes, we will.
You know, I would just add too, in the suburban environment, obviously the population is really dense. So therefore, schools are facilities, especially during a pandemic situation, that are empty and available. Barrington High School, for example, we have 3,000 students in that building, and right now it's a big empty place. We have a huge amount of parking. We have a great access to the facility, centrally located in the community, and all those types of things. So it becomes the obvious choice. I actually have had those conversations a couple days ago with our public health officials that that would be the key location if, when and if that type of situation would arise. I also agree that I hope we create a good plan and never have to use it. And certainly that's the position we're in right now. But if we have to, we certainly will do what we can to help support community health and welfare.
What are each of you doing to try to keep your staff safe and healthy during this process of delivering meals to students?
Well, I will just say from Vandalia and for each community, it's going to evolve as you have potentially a staff member quarantine. So to start thinking through that lens, having experienced that now, we shortened our shifts. So we really defined over this weekend what essential employees looks like for Vandalia School District. What is the least number of employees that we can deliver our food? I mean, food is our primary focus, but we are doing temperature checks of every single person reporting to work as an essential employee. But I want to highlight that the context is because we have a staff member that has been ordered to quarantine, has elevated our thinking. Reflecting upon that, knowing that COVID-19 could be in every single community, we need to be preparing for when and should we implement those steps proactively instead of like I did reactively. I would strongly encourage superintendents to think through the proactive instead of reactive lens, experiencing that this weekend myself.
And I think to tag on to that a little bit, I think one of the things that we also need to acknowledge, and our district is not unique in this, but oftentimes our essential employees are those are the ones that just show up to work no matter what. And so trying to get some of them to understand that if you're sick, if you don't feel well, we need you to stay home. And to convince some of them who are used to coming to work no matter what, that it's okay to stay home. It's okay to figure out what your illness might actually be. To give some grace to that is, I think, important for them to understand. And so we've worked really hard to try and communicate that to our essential employee category, that's okay. I think the other thing that we need to begin to think about, and I have no idea what the answer is, but I think conversation around this makes some sense, is to begin to figure out what's the protocol for return to work going to look like ultimately for our essential employees through this pandemic process. I think that work on people's part is going to be really important, whether that's the cooperation with IDPH or conversations that we have in our local school districts or with our local health departments. But that's something we're going to need to be able to resolve as we continue to move forward operationally as schools.
I would agree with both what Jennifer and Gary said. I would just add one key component for us is our IT staff right now. We are a one-to-one district and with staff and with students. And right now we're able to continue creating an educational environment. However, it is all based on the back of our technology team. And I have, certainly impressed upon them how critical it is, first of all, for them to stay healthy, but also, to be engaged on a regular basis. They are the critical team. And if they aren't able to perform, and which I know they are at this point, then it's really going to create some significant challenges for us. So we've encouraged them as much as any group to, practice social distancing, keep washing hands and make sure they're doing that on a regular basis. One thing that I've also asked them to do is to continue to look for software solutions that can help our teachers, help our administrative team, as well as to support our operations team on the ground. To keep things, as normal as possible given these circumstances. So we are pursuing a couple different things in that regard. For example, using Zoom as the primary communication tool to be able to have staff meetings for principals, to be able to communicate with kids in small groups. And we're looking to engage in that process moving forward, especially if this turns into a long-term thing. So keeping that social distance, keeping our staff healthy and safe is key. But I think IT is a critical function right now in any school district.
This is Jason. We had some technical problems, which is why You didn't hear Dr. Clark after the first two questions, so that'll be the end of the podcast. I want to thank everyone for joining us, and I just want to leave everybody just with this message that's just important to lean on everyone for solutions, and that if you have any questions, I know anybody on the IASA COVID-19 SWAT team will help. We have field services director, and we're all stronger together, so I just encourage everybody to lean on each other during this tough time.